A very good afternoon to you and a warm welcome to On The Reading News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and I'm here to keep you company until 14:30. Now, of course, I understand that France has been keeping you company up this whole week. I sure hope that, of course, you have been learning a lot from his wisdom and insights on many different topics. Now, of course, I'm back here in my seat to keep you company all throughout On The Reading News Analysis. Now, it's Monday, the 22nd of September, 2025. The start of a brand new week, and of course the children have also gone to school and many of us are transitioning back into the rhythm of our daily life. Now, whether you're navigating the street, a bustling street of Windhoek, catching up on errands and soccer moments, spending quality time with your family, perhaps in Ketmanshoop, or just relaxing under a tree in Otapi, thank you for choosing Eagle FM today. Now, right here on the Reading News Analysis, we don't just skip the headlines. We take a closer look and ask the questions that really matter. What does this mean for Namibians? How does it shape our daily lives, our opportunities, and our future? Now, from national policies to local realities, we unpack the stories that impact you and I. And remember, your voice matters right here on the Reading News Analysis. To make sure that you share your thoughts via with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, even WhatsApp, or through the Eagle FM app and website. Now, because this show is as much as about you as it is about the news. Now, from the bustling streets of Windhoek to the scenery evenings of Walvis Bay, from the agricultural heartlands of Oshakati to the open plains of Mariental, wherever you're tuned in this Monday afternoon, we're glad to have you with us. This is On The Reader News Analysis. Namibia's stories unpacked and connected to the people who live them. Now, let's dive right in today's news analysis. Now, as world leaders gather in New York for the United Nations General Assembly, discussions are expected to focus on global challenges such as climate change, sustainable development, and international cooperation. Representing Namibia is the President of Namibia, President Nzumbana Ndaitwah, who will take part in those high-level deliberations, signaling the country's commitment to addressing pressing global issues while fostering international participation. Now, speaking at the 43rd Annual Awards Gala Dinner of the Africa America Institute last week, President Nzumbana Ndaitwah emphasized that Africa is entering a new era of investment, one that prioritizes not only economic growth, but also fairness, responsibility, and tangible benefits for local communities. Now, the Gala Dinner brought together leaders, policymakers, and education advocates from across the continent during a panel discussion moderated by AAI President Felicia Apenteng, President Nzumbana Ndaitwah, and Mozambique and President Daniel Francisco Chapo highlighted reforms in their countries aimed at attracting responsible investment. And just that word, responsible, attracting responsible investment. They stressed that sectors such as tourism, oil, gas, agriculture, renewable energy, and logistics are open to investors, but engagement comes with conditions. Now, investors are expected to comply with national laws, respect communities, and ensure that development efforts translate into tangible jobs, skills transfer, and long-term economic opportunities. Reflecting on Namibia's long-term standing partnership with AAI, President Nzumbana Ndaitwah noted that the Institute has supported over 350 Namibian alumni who now play key roles across government, business, and civil society. And I quote, "This partnership demonstrates the transformative power of combining education with opportunity," she said, underscoring the importance of such initiatives in driving inclusive growth across Africa. Now, the AAI Gala, an annual highlight in the Institute's calendar, champions education, networking, and advocacy while encouraging a new generation of investors to embrace ethical and social responsible business practices. Namibia's presence at the United Nations General Assembly, coupled with its vision for responsible investment at home, reflects a broader strategy of aligning national development priorities with global commitments, reinforcing the country's position as a proactive player in Africa's economic and social transformation. Of course, I've reached out to international analyst scholar Ricky Simasigu. Let's take a listen to that conversation. A very good afternoon to you, Ricky Simasigu, and a pleasure to have you once again on the Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Now, of course, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah is currently in New York in anticipation of the United Nations General Assembly, which brings together, will bring together about 150 leaders, heads of state, also known as the World Cup of Diplomacy. Just how very significant is this event that the leaders are anticipating to attend?
It's a very significant or rather important event. First of all, I think it will encompass three areas or three pillars, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
So that's to say the president is out there advancing Namibia's economic growth and development. The other issue, as you have seen in latest media reports, the issue of two seats for Africa and the UN Security Council. And also the hot cake on the international stage, which is the recognition of the Palestinian state. So I think the president's visit will mainly focus on these three areas.
Mm. Now, of course, we know that the UN usually comes together in order to discuss very important aspects, where it serves as a global forum where countries can discuss international issues, coordinate policies, and make recommendations on matters such as peace, security, of course, human rights, and development. And, of course, you highlighted another aspect of what they could be discussing there. But what other things could really see them bring on the table, or what is it that perhaps the people may want them to bring on the table and thoroughly discuss and bring about amicable solutions to issues that are affecting a lot of countries and nations at this time around?
As I've stated earlier, the Palestinian Israeli issue is a major issue on the
table.
So the UN the UN General Assembly is to vote in recognition of a Palestinian state. So the stakes are high, and Namibia, as you might know, is one of the vocal countries in the world that has always stood with the Palestinians and has always advocated for a Palestinian state.
Mm.
So I think today, or rather when the General Assembly meets, Namibia will make the right decision and stand on the right side of history, as it has always done, in favor of the Palestinians. But the other issue is on the sidelines, as you know, Namibia has met a number of other, Namibia's president has met a representative brother of the European Union and other presidents. So the whole discussion centers on economic growth, investment for Namibia. So those are basically the things that are to watch out for.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Now, on top of this, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, during the 41st Annual Awards Gala Dinner of the Africa-America Institute, alongside Mozambican President, also delivered a speech, on the importance, where they both stressed on the importance of agriculture, tourism, oil, renewable energy, logistics, and that Namibia is open to investment. Now, of course, with the President giving this speech in that regard, what does this say about our country and the way I think President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah has been really extending out invitations to those who would want to do business with Namibia? Just where does this actually place us?
Actually, we are being marketed, if you like. President Hage Geingob, the late President Hage Geingob, actually took more or less similar steps. When a president visits the United States, it's an opportunity to do everything at once.
Yeah,
shooting two birds with one stone, as they like to say. So, it's an idea that the president speaks to various entities, various leaders, and then that's where Namibia seeks support, seeks investment, and so on. So I think, in short, it's all about trying to gather support for Namibia in the areas of gas, oil, that's booming. We lack expertise, or we seek partners.
Mm.
And these are the things that Namibia is out there looking for.
That's true. Now, Namibia's partnership with the Africa America Institute, or also known as AAI, has supported over 350 alumni contributing across sectors. Now, just how important are education-focused partnerships in shaping a country's investment climate?
These partnerships are very important because they are they focus on the development of human capital.
Mm.
So Namibia, through this partnership, has been able to have its alumni capacitated, share or benefit from skills from other countries, as well as benefits of funding. So I think Namibia has actually benefited from this, and they have also enhanced our capacity to deal with sustainable development goals as envisioned by the United Nations, and also the Vision 2063 of the African Union. So these type of scholarships, partnerships have really helped in capacitating our people, especially the young people.
Mm. Would you say such programs serve as a model for other African nations seeking to attract responsible investment at the same time while they are building local capacity, or just how?
I believe everything is of benefit because, as I've said, Namibia benefits from skills, sharing of skills from America, for instance. Other countries that are part of the same initiative. So it's worth it, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And for you, Ricky Simasiko, being an international analyst scholar, what is it that you would expect from this meeting, specifically from President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah? What are those particular aspects that you would not want her to leave out, that you would want her to touch and actually make known in regards to Namibia?
Well, it's a very good opportunity, or it's a big opportunity for Namibia. I would urge the president, especially in my favorite subject, the issue of the Palestinian statehood. Namibia, as we all know, is born out of injustice, colonialism. Our people fought for our country, our territory. So, I mean, the Palestinians, we share the same pain with them. And I think Namibia and the president should really advance this issue in the relevant platform during this session. Apart from that, I think speaking to the right investors in the country, I mean, in the U.S. For our country, would really be the best thing. And of course, I'm happy that the Namibia Planning Commission's Director General is part of this trip. We have one young member of parliament, which shows the transfer of skills, capacitation, you know. So I feel like we should give so much
credit?
Credit to the president on that regard. And then the National Planning Commission should be really the center stage of this visit to say, we have this opportunity, let's speak to the right people. The president will not always make trips to the United Nations, the United Nations, or to the United States, rather. So it's an opportunity that we have to speak to the right people speak to the right countries, since all the countries are meeting during this platform, other than the president traveling from this country to another. So on the margins, on the sidelines, I think bilateral talks with countries from the Middle East that could really invest in our development, for instance, we ought to use this opportunity to speak to them.
Mm. I think I could only have agreed with you even the more on that particular one. Nonetheless, Ricky Simasiko, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Okay, thank you so much for your invitation.
Okay. And then we had it from Ricky Simasiko. For now, let's pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace, but we'll be back with more right here on the Radar News Analysis.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Lipuranenge no wapumbwa eva tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushengife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa dafanona Monica ko Eagle FM onoreta timwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko derewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth.
Welcome back. You are still tuned into On the Radar News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. And now, of course, I'm joined in studio by one of our reporter journalists, Matthias Angara. Good afternoon, Matthias, and it's a pleasure to have you with me right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And a very good afternoon to you.
Of course. Now, Matthias, you've covered a story in our The Villager e-paper, which is, of course, out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, just for those who probably are not aware yet. Now, I covered a story in which you spoke about the city of Windhoek through its public transportation division. Last week hosted a Leadership in Motion, a commuter experience ride for leaders to get a glimpse of daily commuters' experiences with public transport. Kindly go in it. What are the findings eventually now after the leaders actually got the experience?
Like you said, the city of Windhoek organized this commuter ride whereby they brought in a lot of different leaders, the likes of the deputy minister in the Ministry of Urban and Rural Development, and the idea was really to just give a sense to the leadership on how or what are the struggles people face in terms of accessing workstations.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give you a sense of how it looked like, very early mornings you will find a lot of bus stations filled with a lot of commuters who are struggling really to find hikes to reach their work destination. And also, equally in the afternoon, during peak hours, knocking off, you find a lot of people again standing at bus stations waiting to be picked up. And this is because In the afternoon, you know, a lot of public transport is in the forms of taxis are not really willing to drive long distances to spare on the fuel.
Mm.
And is this, you know, contributing to long queues, you know, during those peak hours? And forming up a big number of these commuters, you will find a lot of women especially, and also school children. And, you know, Windhoek is mostly made up, when it comes to public transport, you have your taxis, you have your municipal buses, and then you have, the Kalefas, the mini buses, and which are mostly overloaded, and there's a congestion, which also the leadership acknowledge, especially in their speeches. They acknowledged that they have observed long queues and congestion, as well as also congestion when it comes to public transport in the morning. And this because also of a design on of how the city was designed. You know, you will see that the busy area or the CBD is situated mostly, it's concentrated on one area.
Mm-hmm.
And you are going to expect that during those peak hours, for traffic to be facing on one direction, and as well as during knocking off time, you will see that traffic is also facing at one destination on one direction. So this is contributing to congestion on the road, given the fact that, you know, we don't have a tram in Namibia as well as any other means of transport. So it makes difficult for some to reach their work destinations on time. This also, you know, contributing to low productivity. So, but we are seeing also some developments when it comes to road constructions around the city, you know, just to make it a little bit easier for traffic to flow on. Especially we are seeing a lot of work in Enias Peter Nanyemba Road, which is stretching from Samara Machel up to North Industry Area. So that is the situation on the ground. The leadership,
Matthias,
the leadership actually is.
Sorry, Matthias, what did some of the leaders propose solutions to this particular issue? I mean, of course, a lot of Namibians or a lot of people, especially living in the side of Katutura and walking the side of the CBD, know the situation at hand as they experience it every day. Even the struggle of actually getting a cab or getting transport to get you to your workplace. Just what solutions were discussed? What potential solutions were brought on the table, even if it's just suggestions?
Yes, regarding the speeches of, you know, the that of the mayor of the city of Windhoek, as well as that of the deputy minister in the urban and rural development, they are seemingly suggesting that they are several stakeholders when it comes to this finding a solution, amicable solution to this. You have to remember that the municipalities, town councils, as well as village councils in the country, their capital budgets are approved by the line ministry.
Mm.
So now they are of the opinion that all the stakeholders have to come on board to ensure that the funds are availed to ensure that these problems are solved amicably.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have now the land ministry, which is the urban and rural development ministry. You have now the road fund administration, which is have a task of collecting funds and ensuring that those funds are channeled to the right
stakeholders.
You know, stakeholders to ensure that the roads are constructed. And you also have the city of Windhoek. They are talking about the municipal councils, which are supposed to approve any capital projects. They are supposed to, you know, to meet and approve those capital projects. And you have also the community leaders who are supposed to point out to the city that this is the need, this is what we need, this is what is necessary,
mm-hmm.
and when is it necessary. So, you know, they are proposing active participation from all the stakeholders involved so that we make this, you know, this city to be accessible, especially when it comes to work, to workstations on time.
Mm-hmm.
You have to also bear in mind that some of these are people who are struggling to put bread on the table, and they are the ones who are responsible for households in terms of educating the children. Like I said, that they are the ones who are sending children to school and using also those means of transport. So, you know, it's more of a bread and butter issue, and I believe finding a better solution to this situation also contributes economically. And this will also allow, you know, funds to flow within the city.
Yeah, that's true. Now that you mention about especially being them being the breadwinner and also having perhaps to cater for to their family members. Imagine a mother of three having to wake up at 5 o'clock or perhaps 4:30 or 5 on the dot to actually get ready in order to be able to catch the 6 o'clock bus that goes to Sumbabasia. And eventually when she knocks off again, waiting, being on that bus at, maybe being at the stop at 5 o'clock, the bus goes, makes another round. If it's not full, back to the same spot where it had started before. And then it takes about an hour to actually get home, or perhaps even an hour, 30 minutes, depending also on how traffic is congested on the road. And there's a mother who still has to help her children with their homeworks and also give family time, you know. So you can see that it actually robs the society of that bonding time as well, of parents being able to help their children in navigating life in general, and of course helping them with their schoolwork, and of course just catching up, you know, as a family. So it's really something that needs to be looked in. I just kind of like didn't picture it in that particular angle, except when you spoke about in this side that actually opened up my understanding in that aspect. Yeah.
Yes, because now that you mentioned regarding Sumbabasia, you know, the Prosperity area is one of the you know, the thorn in the flesh, really, when it comes to commuters, because few buses reach that area, and at times you will see it when people are knocking off, they will come this side of the B1 road to catch the Kalefas. And there were also reports of people who were bumped while trying to cross the road. Some, when they are uploaded on the left side of the road when going to work. So this shows you that there is really insufficient means of transport to help the people. And another angle we can also discuss is the fact that, you know, the public transportation system is one which keeps the fuel industry at afloat, because then you have the taxis, which are on the run 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they are on the run, they will need fuel. And it's that fuel which keeps a lot of people employed. It keeps a lot of also mothers and fathers to be able to send their children to school. And it's this type of economy which is really, really keep funds flowing within the economy of the city, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the money which is coming from the taxi driver, which pays the fuel, which now enable the fuel station to buy the fuel and then to pay the employees and to pay for other expenses, you know. And these are the funds which keeps flowing. And because it's the same mother again who's also working at the service station, who's able to send their children to school, to wake up early in the morning to like to catch the bus, as we are saying, and so forth and so forth.
And Matthias, let's also not shy away from the fact that, you know, municipality buses are often really overloaded. It's a conversation that I really desire to have with them in regards to who actually then, what happens when they themselves who put in the law, or who holds the law themselves accountable. I hope that actually makes sense. In terms of city buses being overloaded, and then I hope, and we just can only pray that never in any instance that, of course, a city bus overturns. But in the case where something like that happens and the bus was so overloaded, who then do we point fingers to? I mean, if we see in terms of Khalifas or mini buses when they are overloaded, and that one I cannot even advocate for because they drive so recklessly, they overload, they don't even care for the people themselves. And I also put my point my blame to the people themselves. They go into a bus that it's really already overloaded. Loaded. And of course, I know you're trying to get home, but then at the end of the day, what if you actually don't get home or you don't get home safely? So then in terms of city buses being overloaded, just what can we say about that, Matthias?
I think overloading is entirely the responsibility of the drivers. And in most instances, we see that whenever they reach, they encounter a traffic stop, there are instances where they also got traffic fines. And it's something I think the city is trying to resolve, because in the past there were also reports of corruption when it comes to, the buses used to receive cash.
Mm.
And now, if you look in the speech of the minister, she is saying that this will be something of the past anytime soon, because the system
has been introduced now.
Mm. So now we are to see now that perhaps this will change, because then there won't be any mean to solicit funds, perhaps in the form of corruption from the side of perhaps of those who are in charge of the buses. So it's entirely the responsibility of the bus driver to ensure that they are responsible, they are adhering to road, traffic laws, and they have to make sure that they are responsible in that case.
I hear you. You know what, Matthias, thank you so much. That's really a thorough conversation, which is also quite an eye-opener. And maybe one last question I would ask you is, what is the responsibility of us commuters then, who actually go and take this buses or the Khalifas or the taxis? What is our responsibility in that angle?
You see, if you stand at the bus station in the morning and see how people are catching this Khalifas, at times, you will see the moment the Khalifa stop, people run in, will storm in. Basically, it tells you that the person wants to reach their workstation on time. And because they understand that their employer doesn't care how people reach to their workstation, all they want is...
Maybe some.
That
Let's not say their employers.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Some employers, they are not really concerned about how the person reach to their workstation, but all they want is for the person to reach there on time. So now, perhaps what is in the mind of this person is to say that for them to maintain their bread, they can go, they are willing to sacrifice, go, into a minibus.
An overloaded minibus.
It means to overload, because what they are thinking about is to maintain their bread.
Mm.
And this is, it's a situation where a person is placed between a rock and a hard stone. So now, I'm not saying that people must go into minibuses even though they can see it's full, but I'm saying it's a desperate situation. And I think if we also look at it from this angle to say, okay, it basically means that we need to come up with another way of transporting people to work on time, maybe to look at how we design the city and find out another means in the form of maybe trams, like I said. But it also tell us on how we design our city, because then if we have to design a rail train, in which way are we going to design it? Where do we have space and all that? Because you have people concentrated, especially in the morning, concentrated in one area. And this area is mostly crowded in the morning. And if you look different areas again, where people work, the CBD, the Zimbabwe, like we said, and, the climate, one area concentrated with commuters. who don't have a means of transport to take them home. So, you know, that shows you how are we going to redesign the city if we are to come up with a tram station. Where are we going to put it? Where are we going to construct it? So, perhaps we have to say, okay, this is also an opportunity for those who want to enter into the transportation industry to say there is a market, but the market is concentrated during peak hours.
Mm-hmm.
During peak hours, mm-hmm. It's more concentrated.
Okay.
So now, this also tells us that we need to do more when it comes to also creating job security for those who are in the public transportation industry.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Matthias Sangala, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis. I do appreciate your insights and your contributions with us right here.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there you had it from Matthias Angara. He is a reporter and a journalist right here on Eagle FM, a voice that many of you are quite familiar with, especially when he's hosting The Twilight in the mid hours or mid morning hours on weekdays. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace. We have yet more news coming your way that we have to analyze and we are going to analyze. So stay tuned. Also, remember that you can be part of the conversation. All you have to do is dial in on 083-288-401.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihowe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarude dayo loka. Opone ujendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bari heari nola natu heari bari no heari. Ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bari o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM.
Welcome back. And now, of course, for other news analysis, we are joined in studio by Eagle FM's reporter and journalist, Anakleta Haikera. Good afternoon, Anakleta. It's a pleasure to have you always with us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon, happy, and it's extremely hot in Rundu today.
I can imagine, hey? But nonetheless, Rundu people are embracing such good news that Ndama East School has now been declared legal, which is now,
indeed,
of course, setting a new beginning or a new dawn for education. Kindly get into that for us, Anakleta.
Now, as you can remember, for the past week, we've been fighting about the Ndama School being told or being said by different ministry that it was operating illegal for the past 3 years, which means since 2022, hundreds of children have been learning in matched open-air spaces exposed to harsh weather conditions with limited teaching materials and no formal school buildings. And then these children had 14 volunteering teachers who has been improvising with material sheets as blackboards and makeshift benches made of logs. You can just imagine what this news means.
Imagine your own daughter having to go to school at such every day.
And after the announcement on Friday by the minister or the prime minister and the minister of education, parents, elders, and also the headmen of Ndama were so excited, saying that at least they were heard. Because for the past week, you know, these parents said, come storm, come fire, they were not going to move their kids from the certain place where they are. And they even said, even if they have to move their kids, other schools were already overcrowded. As we all know that Rundu or Kavango is one of the region that has classes or learners that are attending classes with overcrowded learners. Perhaps one class might have 90 learners in it, and this is extremely not good for a learner, especially who is in Kavango East region. So provided the fact that it was now illegal, these learners are going to have 25 permanent classrooms, and that will
25, right? You say 25?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 25 permanent classrooms. That is from next year, January. And also the minister indicated that this construction must be spearheaded, and it must just be constructed in a way that when these kids are going to start classes, they will be very happy to sit around tables and chairs as any other child in Namibia.
Mm. Anakleta, what does this say about serving the people? Of course, a whole lot of people were for the Ndama School, as much as it was declared illegal. I'm reflecting on how Minister of Education, Sanet Steenkamp, had pronounced herself in Parliament just the other couple of weeks ago. Now, of course, just what does this say? How do we translate this news now for the people who have been anticipating and be our leaders, of course, looking at trying to get an amicable solution, but at the end of the day, weighing the balances and seeing what the masses actually want.
First of all, I need to recommend the community in Dama itself. I now understand that everything starts with the community.
Thank you.
You know, they stood their ground to say that we really need a learner to be educated. And also this marks a new beginning for this Ndama East community to force education so that a learner cannot be teach or taught under a tree, but also in a structure where any other can go to, and it's a nice one for a learner, so to say. And if you look at how the headman was moved by the news. He said that really, man, I'm older. As I stand right now, I'm 78 years old. And believe me, when we went to fight for this country, we needed everyone to be educated.
Mm.
And it's also a good thing that now education is free, and not only for the small ones, and also for next year, so to say, education will also be free at varsity level. So he said this marks an extremely good relationship between government and us now, the individuals, because if you are considered that, yes, the community have decided, and us as government, we go and just give them this news to say the school is legal. This makes a milestone for everyone that has been fighting and saying that the school should be illegal already, because they are more than 550. Where will these learners be? This is the future of tomorrow. So where must we put them?
I appreciate how you rightly put it, how you give applause to the community. You know, this one thing that I've come to realize is that, you know, a group of people will stand by something, and eventually when the water gets too hot, you see some of them are pulling away and chickening out and all that kind of stuff. But when they collectively actually do stand, when of course they see their environment and see what is beneficial to them and what is beneficial to their children, and they stand their ground to say, you know what, we think this is what we can tell you. That and of course, I think I've heard as you covered the story along the lines that one of the parents was like saying that the other school is actually too far, Ndama East is actually too far for the children to go there. And it's really worth applauding them. And I think it sends a really strong message to other community members out there, or to other people out there who want to collectively come together and enforce something to be put in place to make sure that they stand together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I remember that the parents at that babies really express a relief and joy over the announcement because they believe that there are a lot of things happening within schools. If you are in Dama and you need to send your child to perhaps the only nearby school there is more really like 5 kilometers, so to say. And then this child has to wake up in the morning. Mm-hmm. Like we are talking about 5:30 or 4:30 already because this is to walk. And parents were saying, what if this child gets raped? Well, there's already a place where this child can be educated.
Mm-hmm.
So the ministry really, really needs to look at it, and this school needs to be legalized.
Exactly. Yeah.
So how, the community fought and how they put everything together just for them to be heard and to be seen so that at least a Namibian child can get educated.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Minister Sanesti, and I quote from what you wrote on Eagle FM page in regards to this particular story, Anakleta, where you said every child has the right to learn under a proper roof by next week, Friday. We will provide tents so that no learner will be forced to study under trees again, as Minister Sanesti assured. Now, in addition, you did say that the minister revealed that Ngove Primary School, also located in Damer, has been allocated $1 million, a budget dedicated to improving sanitation facilities. I'm looking at this from this angle to see the role of media and what media actually plays in terms of exposing certain things and bringing change, positive change to a community or to an environment.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it, we reported about the COVID school, in early August, where we went to visit the school, and believe me, I was shocked to see... Let me just brief you a little bit about Kove.
Yeah.
Kove is a community school and it's a government school with more than 90 Sun community learners. So now imagine there is 214 learners at Kove, and these kids are forced to use 2 toilets, which is not even proper toilets. We are talking about pit latrines.
Mm.
So what do is when they go to the toilet, if somebody is already in the toilet, they rather use the background of that facility. But then you know this is a school, so it's an open ground. So when they are using it, what does that tell you? They are already polluting the place, and at the same time, you know, when we are releasing waste, it smells.
And so, they're exposed to illnesses.
Afghan was really, really not good for teachers and learners at the same time. So now when the ministry had it, they allocated $1 million that is for sanitation. And this morning, the minister went to visit the school. The prime minister went to visit the school and he allegedly said, the school should have toilet facility, and the toilet facility should be built within 2 weeks. And this will be done by Rundu Vocational Training Center students that are doing plumbing.
Are they going to be? Are they building pit latrines or?
No. They are not going to build pit latrines. They also engage the town council to say that now is the time that the town council should provide water for these people so it can they can have flush toilets.
Isn't that really good news? It is. Anakleta, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Have a great day.
Okay. And there you had it from our reporter, Anakleta Haikarer, of course, giving us heads up on what has transpired in regards to the Ndama school, which has now been legalized. Formerly was not legalized, but now has been legalized in its school to about 500 school-going children. Of course, make sure that you do follow us on Eagle FM WhatsApp page as well as Facebook page, where we're always engaging you in educating you to keep you well informed with the facts. facts, where the facts are not just a merely opinion based, but rather factual content that we are feeding you. I like to say that this is Eagle FM. It's not a gossip column, but rather a source of real, tangible news. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. This is On The Radar News Analysis. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now, if you haven't grabbed your copy of the Villager e-paper, that is your electronic copy, make sure that you do, as today is Monday. And of course, we have released today's edition of the Villager, and it covers the following headlines. Government to pay $1.6 billion in coupon interest in October. 25 classrooms to be built in Dama, replacing three classrooms. More than 500,000 cyber issues detected in 3 months. Heritage Week focused on passing culture to future generations. Leaders in Motion, commuter rights to understand urban mobility challenges. UCI President hopes for Africa to produce world champion. U.S. executive orders have become a monthly tradition. Now, of course, grab your copy to ensure that you read up on this social economic issues and more. Of course, to receive more, make sure that you, or to subscribe, send it WhatsApp text message on 081-200-4144. That is 081-200-4144. All you have to do is send a text message, a WhatsApp text message, so that you can be subscribed to receive tri-weekly dose of social and economic news. Now, with that being said, for now, we tell you what's making headlines in terms of Namibia's economic indicators. Now, of course, we start off with Namibia comparing it to other currencies. We're starting off with the US dollar comparison to the Namibian dollar. Now, one US dollar is equals to 17 Namibian dollar and 21 cents, and that is for today. And £1 sterling is equals to 23 Namibian dollars and 34 cents. 1 euro, on the other hand, is equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 35 cents. And 1 Australian dollar is equals to 0.56 euro. No, pardon me. 1 Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars and 40 cents. 1 Swiss franc is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 79 cents. 1 Chinese yuan is equals to 2 Namibian dollars and 43 cents. 1 New Zealand is equals to 10 Namibian dollars and 13 cents. And 1 Russian ruble is equals to 0.21 Namibian dollars. 1 Botswana pula, on the other hand, is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 30 cents. Now over to trading economics. The infrastructure output in India expanded by 6.3% from the previous year in August of 2025, accelerating from the upwardly revised 3.2% increase in the previous month to mark the sharpest pace of growth in 1 year. Now, infrastructure output was supported by coal at 11.4% versus minus 12.3% in July, still at 14.2% versus 16.8%, and cement at 6.1% versus 11.6%, aligned with firms increasing capacity to front load production before more aggressive tariffs by the US were passed in the end of the month. Now, the period also saw cutbacks in material capacity in Chinese competitors due to Beijing's policy of having clear skies in their military parade. Now, on the petroleum front, output rebounded for refinery products and contracted for natural gas and crude oil. Wholesale prices in iron fell by 3% year-on-year in August 2025, slowing from a 3.5% drop in the previous month. Now, this marked the seventh consecutive month of deflation, but the softest since May, as prices increased for food products at 4.4% versus 4% in July, particularly meat and meat products at 7.3% versus 6.7%, and bakery and farinaceous products at 0.6% versus 0.2%. Now, additionally, costs declined at a lower pace for mining and quarrying and basic metals. Meanwhile, prices moderated for pulp, paper and paper products, and on a monthly basis, wholesale prices showed no growth in August after a 0.5% decrease in the preceding period. Meanwhile, the British pound trade around 1.35 US dollars, holding near Friday's 2 week of a 1,346 US dollars as investors awaited the S&P Global Flash PMI survey and remarks from Bank of England and Federal Reserve officials while remaining concerned over the UK's fiscal outlook. Now, data last week showed public sector net borrowing surged to nearly 18 billion euros in August, far above market expectations of 12.5 billion euros. Taiwan's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate rose to 3.35% in August 2025 from a 24-year low of 3.33% in the previous month. Now, the latest figure marked the highest reading since April as the number of unemployed persons increased by 3,000 to 403,000, while employment grew by 3,000 to 11.63 million. Now, the youth unemployment rate, which tracks job seekers aged 20 to 24, jumped to an 11-month high of 12.08%, up from 11.91% in the previous month. Meanwhile, the labor force anticipation rate went up to 59.58% in August, the highest level since 1990, compared to 59.51% in the preceding period. Now, let's pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace. When we return, we'll be telling you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe udite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Unongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ujendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali hea hi nola natu. Heari bali no heari ileko derewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%. 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now it's time for News Beyond the Borders. We're starting off in South Africa and then we move over to other regional parts and bring you continental news. Thereafter, you can expect some international news. Now, of course, the G20 Innovation Summit in South Africa aims for shared sustainable future. Let's take a listen.
G20 research. The Department of Science, Technology and Innovation is hosting the third G20 Research and Innovation Working Group and the ministerial meeting in Pretoria. Now, the department has been leading the science, technology and innovation track since South Africa assumed the G20 presidency. Starting last Thursday, the department has been hosting a series of G20 events and related side events. The work will culminate in the G20 Research and Innovation Ministerial Meeting, which will be held tomorrow. This is where the G20 Research and Innovation Ministerial Declaration will be adopted. For more on this now, let's take you to Diabo Sito, who's monitoring developments on this front. So, Diabo, how is science and technology shaping our lives?
Good morning. Well, we will know that shortly when this meeting officially gets underway, but we've seen a lot of delegates already streaming in, including the Minister, Professor Blade Nzimande, who is here, also and other ministers from other different African countries. And we'll find out exactly what is in store with regards to science, research and innovation. And I think your intro summed up everything, because today's events are culminating to tomorrow, where there'll be this big ministerial meeting. And of course, there's a bigger picture, since we are the hosts and we have the presidency of the G20. We are on the road to November, I like to call it, you know, when that big ministerial, when that big heads of state meeting will be taking place. But we have invited the acting CEO of the NACI, Ms. Annalene Morgan. She's going to give us her views about, you know, what we can expect here. Ms. Morgan, thank you so much for making time to speak to us here at the SABC. Take us through, firstly, what is NACI? I was at pains of explaining it to Mkolisi, my colleague, about, you know, how scientists from around the world, you know, from leading economies, there's no small snit, and how is South Africa being a significant player on behalf of the African continent?
Thank you very much. So the NACI is the National Advisory Council of Innovation. It's one of the entities established under the Department of Science, Technology and Innovation. It has a council which is chaired by the board. And this advisory institution provides scientific evidence-based science advice to the minister. So we report directly to the minister, and we commission research in the National System of Innovation on key emerging policy issues, which we then advise the minister and is able to take appropriate decisions which are implemented through the Department of Science, Technology and Innovation. Yeah.
So far, what kind of support have you received from South Africa on proposals that have been put on the table?
So we successfully hosted yesterday the G20 Chief Science Advisors Roundtable meeting, which is all the chief science advisors from the G20 countries. And these advisory services in most of the countries are either located within the offices of the presidents or the offices of prime ministers, or they stand alone advisory councils like our council. So yesterday we adopted an outcome statement as part of the G20 Chief Science Advisors Roundtable under the theme of using science, technology and innovation and understanding the importance of inclusive human development and global sustainability.
Let's talk about how you see South Africa shaping what they call the STI agenda beyond this year. We're handing over the presidency back to the US at the end of this year. But when you envisage a couple of years from now on and look at the contribution that South Africa has made, or that Africa has made, how would you shape it, or how would you communicate it?
Yeah. I think for South Africa, it's really an opportunity time that we use the G20 presidency, one that will enable us to leverage all these resources from the different countries. The G20 brings in diversity in terms of the capacities that the G20 countries have. You've got the global south, you've got the global north within the G20. And as the South African presidency, we also saw it fit to make our presidency as benefiting Africa. So we also extended invitations to some of the African countries, because we want to say on the agenda of G20, yes, we've got different national policies and priorities, but the world is vastly interconnected. And if we don't work together, we will not be able to achieve our own individual national aspirations. As South Africa, we champion, as you know, the National Development Plan. We also, as part of the science sector, we've got what we call the Science, Technology and Innovation Decadal Plan that was adopted in 2022. So how do we use the priorities of the Decadal Plan to ensure that they see through within the different agendas that are going to be adopted in the G20?
I can imagine, Ms. Annelien, people watching us and thinking evaluation, monitoring and evaluation, how do we measure that what your department is doing is successful or not, and what can be done further in the next round? And what does success also look like to South Africans who are looking to science for solutions?
Yeah, very interesting question, because yesterday we had a very interesting afternoon session, which we call the knowledge sharing session, which our minister opened. And during the minister's address to the stakeholders, he highlighted the importance of how do we take science to society and how do we make science relevant to society. And that was the discussion that we were having yesterday. But also, how do we communicate science to society? How do we take the complex issues of science and make it relevant to society? And I think that's been a clear message that has come through in the discussions that has been happening. But going back to the issue of measurement, the key priorities that we've put forward here, we are happy to say that we are building on the presidencies of Brazil. As you know, we took over from Brazil. We are also building on the presidencies of India and taking through those priorities so that we are able to measure over time the impact of the priorities that we've agreed on. Yeah.
Still in South Africa, Mpumalanga police have uncovered crystal meth drug lab.
A tip-off from the community led police to the place where they discovered crystal meth was being manufactured. Large quantities of precursor chemicals used to manufacture drugs, drug manufacturing equipment, and crystal meth were confiscated. A fake gun loaded with blank rounds and three live 9mm rounds were also found in the possession of the farm caretaker.
Our members actually was doing a Shanela 2 operation when they receive information that there is a smell that comes out in one of the premises in the farm. Therefore, they decided to come here and check, and they definitely pick it up that this is definitely a place where the drugs, that is crystal meth, is being manufactured. As a result, they came here, they actually call all the role players.
The owner of the farm has passed away, with the wife now looking after it. The caretaker, including Mexican nationals and one South African, were among those arrested.
Two managed to escape to the bush, and six were arrested in that process. So we have them in now at the moment in custody. We are actually dealing with the situation at this moment, preparing as well, making sure that the place is shut down completely. All role players have been called in, LCRCs has been called in to come and assist and deal with the situation with their expertise. The so-called DPCI has been here as well, doing what they're supposed to do and making sure that we deal with the situation.
Officials say the past has once again exposed South Africa's porous borders.
We need to change our law, that's number one. Number two, we tighten our border, the ins and out. We must know as who is coming out of South Africa, who's going out in South Africa, profile them properly. Then we need to change the law. If our South African found in Mexico doing this thing, we'll be talking a different story. But because it's South Africa, our law sometimes a bit relaxed, they got too much human rights. I think on this one, we'll make sure that those who are in, some of, because it's us who are in charge, who are lawmakers, it's important that the matter must be reviewed in terms of how we deal with these issues, particular on the foreign national coming to us, South Africa.
The accused are expected to appear at the local court on Monday. Calvin Lula, SABC News, Volkrust in Mpumalanga.
Samuel is talking about the transformation under President Hakainde Hichilema. NDP highlights the key achievements. Let's take a listen to them.
The first success that we have scored under the UPND government is peace. There is no investor, like in the mining sector, who can invest in an economy that has no peace, an economy or country that is not stable. Secondly, policy consistency. The reason we have been able to persuade the mining investors is because there has been policy consistency and also putting in place or formulating policies that attract investment. You have seen KCM is back. People in Chingola, Mufurila, Kitwe can now get back their jobs. You have Mimbula mine that now stands at about 3,000 workers. All that goes with leadership. It's not an accident. That's why others lost jobs, but we are gaining more and more jobs. The next thing that you need to deal with, free education. We have managed to add in a space of 4 years, 2.5 million pupils who had stayed away from the classroom because parents had no money to take them to school. Thirdly, we could be talking about CDF. It's self-explanatory. The roads that have been done, the heavy-duty machines, graders that have been procured, could not be procured using 1.6 million. Today, we're talking about 36.1 million. It is unthinkable for any country. Now you have countries like Namibia coming to a country to learn more of how we are using CDF to run the economy, to empower citizens, to empower women, to empower youths, to provide desks in schools. Schools were struggling to get desks. Schools were dilapidated. We can now build classroom blocks. That's what we have done. The next thing that I want to bring out has to do with, first of all, resolving the debt crisis that Zambia has had by restructuring it to enable us have a breathing space to invest in other sectors of our economy. The next issue that is worth noting is the manner with which we are managing the agricultural sector, where we can now produce our own fertilizer. Companies, NCZ and the one in Lusaka put together, you are talking about over 300,000 metric tons of urea, over 300,000 metric tons of D compound. We will be now self-sustaining. We are now producing batteries and exporting to 8 countries, right in Chibombo, in Zambia. We last saw this kind of development under the one-party state, at the beginning of the one-party state. The country was in ICU. Closure of media houses is not taking place anymore. We now have media houses featuring whoever they want. Previously, they could be reporting to IBA almost on a monthly basis to explain themselves. We know that even journalists themselves have been recruited as workers in government. You know of PPR hours. So the issue of job creation is not a joke. It's a reality. What are the achievements? The next achievements that we could be talking about is the idea to deal with issues that relate to SMEs. Zambians now are investing. They are getting loans. Farmers can get support, irrigation equipment support system, tractors. We now have reached a stage where we are able to buy ambulances for various constituencies across the country. Arego using CDF. You have now reached a stage where we are able to buy CDF vehicles to monitor CDF projects in every constituency. Arego, we now have the power, monetary power, to purchase police vehicles in each constituency, which never used to take place. What all these vehicles mean is that they can now provide jobs for drivers. Those that have done driving can now get jobs, earn a living, and feed their families. That's what we are.
Meanwhile, persons with disability in Uganda still live in fear in refugee camps.
Morning at NTV does continue, and we have the Frontiers of the Week seated right in our studio this morning as we look to Uganda's pursuit of the 2026 electoral docket. Questions linger. Are we ready? Are we in progressive stages? And the presidential nominations that are set for tomorrow and Wednesday to delve into the preparations and the significance of these. Are we all in the right tune? Are we in sync? Of course, this stemming from some of the contentious issues that we have seen over the course of the weekend. One party having more than three people saying that they are going to be vying for presidential candidacy. You do have another party being told, Mikono Tejimara, they didn't submit enough signatures, and this is to the tune of 9,800. Among other issues and other party pursues, also stepping down and saying, you know what, this particular arrest, we will not be participating. And so what is the updated list of those that are ready to be verified, vetted, and nominated for the presidential candidacy for 2026. The Electoral Commission is in the House, and we do have the Deputy Spokesperson, Mr. Paul Kenya, to help us and enlighten us on the journey that is before us, not just for the next 2 days, but for the rest of the electoral cycle. Mr. Kenya, yeah. I know that it is a season that is leaving you with sleepless nights and hectic days, but how is it going so far?
Well, good morning, our viewers. It's hectic part of the season. Mm-hmm. We prepared for it, but yeah, it always hits differently.
Yeah.
But yeah, we are adapting, we are rolling it out. The roadmap is moving, it's progressing well. There are lots of stakeholders involved, and everyone is doing their part, and we're moving towards the dates that we indicated on the roadmap when Ugandans will be able to go out and, you know, first of all, present themselves as candidates. We've already seen the various levels, the local government, special interest groups. We have contestants there. We already have elected leaders at in special interest groups, electoral elections. And now we are progressing to presidential nominations. And thereafter, parliamentary and, of course, campaigns. Our elections are in January, although, of course, progressive elections already started, the special interest groups. So we are moving steadily with a roadmap, and it is moving in accordance with the timelines that are laid down in the Constitution. And we're sure that we are going up to the end, all the way to the end. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. All right, let's focus.
Meanwhile, Kenyan women outshine their male counterparts at Tokyo 2025.
Now, of course, women have been at the forefront of Kenya's medal charge in Tokyo, and many in the East African nation have been asking what is holding their male counterparts back. CGTN's Mohamed Abubakar, who we just heard from there, traveled to the self-styled distance running capital of Eldoret in Kenya, in Western Kenya, to find out.
Once again, Kenya sits unchallenged atop the African medal charts at the Tokyo World Championships. For over three decades, male athletes minted most of the medals won by the East African distance running powerhouse. However, the tide has changed at recent editions, with women now ruling the roost. In Eldoret, the self-proclaimed City of Champions, I caught up with Alfred Kirwa Yego, the 2007 World 800-meter champion from Osaka. Yego is alarmed by the male athlete's failure to scale the podium.
Well, it's concern to everyone. Yeah, with me, it's actually a concern to everyone, especially in back here in Kenya. Coaches should go back, sit down, and try to find out where the problem is, and to monitor these male athletes, because they are going down because of reasons here and there.
Yego believes the shift in lifestyle and the diminished hunger to win are major issues that need to be addressed among Kenyan male athletes.
Avoid this lifestyle where you can come back after winning, just walk around, you know, that's where the problem is. But athletes need to be focused, and to immediately when he or she finished that championship, maybe in Tokyo, she will start thinking about the one coming ahead.
Coaches across the country echo similar concerns, pointing to a growing trend among male athletes who are opting for road races while skipping key cross-country and track competitions.
There's a cap which is always not breached in men in always running cross-country and track for a certain time before transitioning. With tend to transition and look at and belittle track and cross country and focus so much on half marathon and full marathon.
Despite Kenya's immense pool of talent, coaches stress the need to adopt modern technology and training methods, warning that the rest of the world is quickly closing the gap.
So if they are embracing technology, and now the issue of professionalizing athletics, then if we don't look at it critically, we are not safe. So I suppose you think we should also embrace the same. I mean, the talent is here. I can assure you for free, the talent in Kenya is incomparable to any other part of the world.
Kenya's campaign in Tokyo has delivered better returns than Budapest. The challenge now is to build on the momentum and reclaim the dominance that once defined Kenyan athletics when the World Championships heads to Beijing in 2027. Mohamed Abubakar for CGTN, Eldoret, Kenya.
Still on sports news, Botswana honors historic win with new holiday for the first gold in world athletics.
The Botswana president has declared yet another holiday to celebrate the country's first gold medal in the World Athletics competition. While speaking in New York, where he's attending the United Nations 80th General Assembly, President Duma Gideon Boko lauded his athletes mainly for their resilience, self-belief, and behind-the-scenes hard work. Boko designated September 29th as a public holiday to commemorate the country's victory. The celebration will take place just a day before the nation celebrates its Independence Day on 30th September. Botswana clinched the gold medal in Tokyo in the 4x400-meter race, marking its first in the history of the World Athletics Championship. The 10-time world champions, the U.S. team, came second, while South Africa came in third. Botswana's team comprised Lee Bekempilo Epi, Letsile Tobogo, Bayapo Ndori, and Busan Kolen Kepinashipi.
Guinea holds high-stakes vote on new constitution.
Campaigns for the new draft constitution concluded on Thursday, just 2 days before the vote. In Guinea's capital, Conakry, and across the country, many supporters took to the streets in a last-ditch effort to sway the undecided.
If this new constitution is passed, it will be very beneficial to women. In terms of education, it will also benefit children who will receive free schooling from the age of 7, which will become compulsory.
In the new constitution, what matters most to me is the section on girls' education. The constitution also aims to provide education for children living on the streets. I will therefore vote yes for this reason.
The referendum opens the way for stalled presidential and legislative elections by the end of this year. It will also see the creation of a Senate alongside the country's National Assembly and allow military leader Mamadi Doumbouya to run for president. The proposed text also extends presidential terms.
Another advantage I particularly like is the clause allowing the President of the Republic to remain in power for 7 years. This means that the President's term of office will be extended from 5 to 7 years.
Rallies against the referendum have been notably absent. Last year, more than 50 political parties were dissolved, a move that Guinea's military leaders said was to clean up the political chessboard. And weeks before the referendum, the three main opposition parties were also suspended for failure to comply with administrative and financial disclosure requirements.
What is significant is that, for the first time, the country's current major political leaders will not be present if the context remains the same. This will mark the end of an era. This may also hasten the internal renewal of these political parties and herald the renewal of the political class. From a democratic point of view, this is an expectation that will be realized. We want to see public freedoms promoted and democracy strengthened further.
The proposed constitution is set to replace a transitional charter, which had barred junta leaders from standing in elections. It also elevates 8 national languages, including Xhosa, Fulani, Malinke, and Kisi, to official status alongside French, and mandates a minimum 30% quota for women in elected and leadership roles. David Mbithi, CGTN.
Now for News Beyond the Borders, the UK tells Israel not to retaliate as France sets to recognize Palestinian state.
The Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper says she's warned Israel not to annex parts of the West Bank in retaliation for the UK's formal recognition of Palestinian statehood. She said that the government was committed to a two-state solution in the region. Ms. Cooper was speaking to the BBC before attending the UN General Assembly in New York, where France and other European states are due to make a similar announcement. Well, this follows Sunday's coordinated announcements by the UK, Canada, Australia and Portugal. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has accused those who recognize Palestine of rewarding terrorists. He insisted Palestinian statehood would not happen. And the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas welcomed the move as a step towards lasting regional peace. Hamas called it a victory. Here's our diplomatic correspondent, James Landale.
The West Bank, East Jerusalem and Gaza may be occupied Palestinian territories, but do they form a state? Yesterday, Britain, Canada and Australia said they did. And at the United Nations today, France and several other European nations will follow suit and make similar declarations.
This is very much a joint effort. Western countries coming together to try to maximise the impact, to send a signal to Israel and its allies that, they believe, international opinion on this is only heading in one direction.
The Foreign Secretary told us the UK had taken a moral decision to challenge the idea there could never be a Palestinian state.
That is doing what extremists on all sides want, which is abandoning any prospect of a two-state solution, that it is incumbent on us now to revive the whole vision, the purpose of a two-state solution.
How concerned are you about the risk of Israel using this as a pretext to start annexing parts of the West Bank?
We have been clear, and I have been clear to the Israeli foreign minister, we have been clear to the Israeli government that they must not do that.
The idea that Gaza, devastated by war, and the West Bank, filled with Israeli settlements, could form a single state might seem a distant prospect. And Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, said it would never happen, saying a Palestinian state would be a terror state. But the man leading the UN's aid agency in Gaza told us a Palestinian state was possible, only if there was a ceasefire.
The declaration is not enough. The declaration are words for the time being. Now we have to walk the talk. So this declaration needs now to be accompanied by this genuine commitment to make the resolve of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict a top priority.
And of course, with that being said, we have now come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkona Ndingi program brought to you by Loise Shimi. From Indafa, happy usual, it is goodbye, and I wish you a wonderful Monday and a restful Monday and the beginning of a new week. Goodbye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Lipura nenge no wapubwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora etatimwe bali heari nola natu heari bali no heari ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere uliko ni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe udite opoewe ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa mene uto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa inge Pada Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bari Hairi, Nola Natu, Hairi Bari, No Hair, Ileko, Derewa, Nora Hetatu, Natu, Bari O Hetatu, Batatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Now while we wait for Loisa to bring you the Onkona Nathenge program, let's keep your company still with news beyond the borders. Now Trump says Mal Dodge would be involved in TikTok deal.
Hate to tell you this, but a man named Lachlan is involved.
Media mogul Lachlan Murdoch, who leads Fox Corp, would be involved in a proposed deal to keep TikTok operating in the United States. That's according to U.S. President Donald Trump on Fox News Channel's The Sunday Briefing. It's the latest in efforts to transfer TikTok's U.S. assets away from China's ByteDance. The move lets Trump allies in corporate America gain influence on the social media app, which has 170 million U.S. users, and shapes public discourse on politics and culture. Other proposed investors Trump named Sunday were business leaders Larry Ellison and Michael Dell, and Trump said the Murdoch family's 94-year-old patriarch, Rupert, may be involved too.
Really great people, very prominent people, and they're also American patriots, you know, they love this country, so I think they're going to do a really good job. I'm a little prejudiced with TikTok because, you know, I did so well with the young voter.
Trump has included negotiations over TikTok as part of wide-ranging economic talks with China. On Friday, he said China's Xi Jinping had approved the deal with TikTok. Reuters reported Saturday the expected deal sees U.S. investors owning the majority of TikTok's U.S. assets, and there'll be a board of directors with national security and cybersecurity credentials. Sources tell Reuters any investment in TikTok U.S. would come through Fox Corp. Its CEO Lachlan Murdoch recently cemented long-term control of his family's media empire that includes Fox News and The Wall Street Journal after settling a years-long legal battle with his siblings. Though known for their conservative views, the Murdochs have clashed with Trump before. Trump sued The Wall Street Journal and Rupert Murdoch for defamation after a report in July linked him to a controversial birthday message for convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein.
Still on News Beyond the Borders, the Swiss dying glacier melting at an alarming pace.
This is a dying glacier.
Switzerland's Greece glacier is disappearing at an alarming pace. Climate change is accelerating ice melt across the country at an unprecedented rate. Matthias Haas, director of Glacier Monitoring Switzerland, is measuring this dramatic retreat.
At this place where we are standing, there will be no ice in maybe 5 years from now.
Higher regions of this glacier reach about 3,000 meters, and it will take about 40 to 50 years for it to disappear. For the lower region, it's taking mere months to see change.
In the beginning of July, the ice surface was up there. So this is the melt that we have seen in just the last 2 months, 2.5 months. So pretty impressive. If we compare the total melting from last September, it's even more. So 6 meters. 6 meters in the vertical direction. Last September, exactly 1 year ago, the ice surface was up there.
Haas pointed to consecutive dry years in 2022 and 2023 as major drivers of ice melt, as well as a warm 2025 summer. That's despite heavy snowfall in mid-April this year, giving momentary relief. According to GLAMOS, around 100 glaciers have vanished between 2016 and 2022 in Switzerland, and it can have devastating effects, with a glacier collapse in May destroying a whole village. Around the globe, the World Meteorological Organization found that since the 1990s, ice loss has increased in nearly all regions and sped up after 2000, mainly due to strong summer melting. It found for the third year in a row, every glaciated region on Earth reported ice loss.
Meanwhile, President Trump speaks at Charlie Kirk's memorial service.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Lee. You've been there from the beginning with us, Lee, and we appreciate it. Nobody can sing that song like Lee Greenwood. Thank you very much, Lee, very much for being here. And his voice has not changed, you know? Pretty amazing. And a special thank you to Erica, because today America is a nation in grief, a nation in shock, and a nation in mourning. Less than 2 weeks ago, our country was robbed of one of the brightest...
Sign up to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one
Christian.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next week.
Murdered by a radicalized, cold-blooded monster for speaking the truth that was in his heart. He was violently killed because he spoke for freedom and justice, for God and country, for reason and for common sense. He was assassinated because he lived bravely. He led boldly, and he argued brilliantly.
And now we hand over the mic back to Luisa Shimi so that she can tell you what's happening in terms of Okanonadegi program. Goodbye.